This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I have not seen an official announcement today, but it does appear that both Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler are headed to LIV Golf. Did you see the story over the weekend that Kevin Na, who was the 33rd ranked player in the world, resigned his PGA Tour membership, which a preemptive move because I believe the PGA Tour's response to this LIV series will be to rescind membership from those players who choose to go play, which is their right.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely their right. And I also agree that this is a very sticky issue. This is nothing simple. There is nothing simple about this. We'll talk about it with Rich Lerner tomorrow. All right, but we always try to do to start off the 2 o'clock hour, unless we have something else that gets in our way, is present you with stuff you need to hear from the day before, maybe, or the couple of days before. It's the Wall of Sound.
The Wall of Sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
All right, let's go to the NBA Finals. So after Game 1, in which Boston outscored Golden State 40-18 in the fourth to win, really going away, there was a lot of worry around the basketball world. Maybe Boston's got them. What was wrong with the Warriors? And Draymond Green said, "We're all right."
Oh, well, I think our offense is always a lot of Steph. It all starts with Steph. Whether, you know, when KD was here, our offense still started with Steph. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be. I think, you know, when you're playing against a team like that, you have to get offense from other places and not just Steph. And I think for the most part, you know, we did a pretty good job of that. You know, Clay, 4 for 19, had a tough one, but, you know, that happens. And we know he'll make shots as this series continues to go on, but we didn't turn the ball over, and I thought that was very important in this game, is keeping them out of transition and making them play against our defense.
And by the way, Boston did turn it over. They had 7 turnovers in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. They were shooting lights out. They were, I think, 10 of 21 from three-point range in the first half. But they had like 13 or 14 turnovers. So it was, basically a one-point game at halftime. Third quarter, Golden State went bananas. Steph Curry, who had a huge game, 29 points, but it was really when he scored more than how much he scored, talked about the other side of the ball and why that was the key.
I mean, it's always been a point of emphasis in terms of trying to win basketball games and do your job over the course of my career. It's been a physical development that's happened over time that obviously helps. A lot of work that's gone into that. But at the end of the day, from my rookie year to now, it's always been about effort and just a care factor. You know, overcoming physical limitations or with matchups or whatever it is. If you try hard, good things will happen, and you'll continue to get better. So it's always been a point of emphasis.
Defense was really why Golden State did well. And if you ask Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics, he would say it was more than just defense.
It's the NBA Finals. You come to play basketball. I know what Draymond's going to do. I know what he's going to try to do. They switched the lineup. They tried to put him on me to kind of be physical, muck the game up, pull me, grab me, and overall, you know, raise the intensity. I feel like they got away with a lot of stuff tonight, but I'm looking forward to the challenge next game. All that stuff, the gimmicks, the tricks, you know, we just got to be the smarter team, be the more physical team, and look forward to just coming out and playing Celtic basketball.
Here's what was interesting. The interview that they did with Ime Udoka, I think, what was it? Was it after the third quarter that they interviewed Udoka? I think it was earlier in the game. It had to be earlier in the game. It was like middle, you know, maybe in between the first and second quarters or middle second quarter, where he actually said, we have to adjust to what they're not calling on the other end, which I thought was incredibly cool. Like, yes, okay, I get it. I get it. I don't know. I think it's the NBA Finals. They're going to allow a little bit more, and maybe in the next game they'll allow a little bit less.
Yeah,
we'll see what, you know, if Jaylen Brown's message through the media gets to the officials. I'm sure Ume Udoka has said the same things. I will say this. I thought both sides were played very well defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were some great defensive plays the other way, too. Boston made some great defensive plays. Look, that was a one-point game at the half. Anybody's game. Golden State just played a great third quarter again, and rather than stay within striking distance, it wasn't. Golden State ran through the tape in the third quarter, and they made that a complete laugher. It was like 24 points in it after three. And it was just a huge gap. Boston wasn't coming back from that. Here's Ime Udoka, the Celtics head coach, on what they need to do.
We had opportunities to probably, you know, attack the basket and get some buckets, some easy buckets. We're settled for some floaters. I think when looking up in the first quarter, we were shooting 50, 40, 90 across the board. It's still down due to a lot of those turnovers. So a lot of times it's just not getting shots up or being a little hesitant instead of going to attack the basket, looking for fouls a lot of times. And that's what got us in trouble. Had some of our early misses in the first half, and with their smaller team, smaller lineups in there, we got to attack the basket much more aggressively.
I would also say that in some ways, they were sort of exposed in not having a point guard. Because even though you may not consider Steph Curry necessarily a point guard, Curry drove into the lane a lot. Mm-hmm. And found players for layups, whether it's Kevon Looney or it was Andrew Wiggins. He found, you know, releases for the pressure of Boston's defense. And I thought that was an underrated part of Golden State's offense. All right. Now you have something, Dennis, that we need to hear, and I need you to set it up.
Okay, so this is the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, I believe, like the Summer Wooden Bat League.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it's one of those. Anyway, it's either lower minor league team or college team. Nevertheless, this weekend they had a game in a series. They had already had consecutive walk-off wins.
Okay.
Well, this is the bottom of the ninth inning, and they were trailing. This is how the game finished. Imagine winning a baseball game without getting a hit.
Okay.
Ground ball sharply hit to short. Bad hop eats up Devaney. He still throws to first and safe at first. Dillard pulled off the base. Payoff pitch from Chirino to Conine, and it misses upstairs. Ball four. The 0-1. High and tight, and it hits him. A hit by pitch will load the bases. It's second Avilas at first. The 1-1 pitch to Ray Patrick Ditter. Inside, and that hits Ditter. A hit by pitch forces in a run. Another 2-2 from Chirino. Fletcher Vance is hit by a pitch. It's the third straight hit batsman, and this game is tied. Winning run is now at third. No margin for error. Infield in, outfield in. The first pitch. Hollins is hit by a pitch. He'll go to first, and the Blue Wahoos walk it off for the third night in a row. In the ninth, error, walk. Hit by pitch, hit by pitch, hit by pitch, hit by pitch, and the Blue Wahoos win it 7-6.
All right.
Yeah, by the way, they're the AA affiliate in the Southern League of the Miami Marlins.
All right, I have a question. By the way, I like the Blue Wahoos as a team name. How was there not a bench-clearing brawl? No, seriously. I'm not even saying that any of those were intentional.
Yeah.
Because they probably weren't. But if your guy hits four of my guys in a row, we're throwing hands.
I mean, but you can walk off with that win, though. That's the thing.
No, I don't care. You can't hit four of my guys. Are you serious?
It just blows my mind how you can score to tie a game and score a winning run without getting a hit.
Well, that's not that uncommon.
There's without getting a hit?
There's a lot of ways to score runs.
Yeah, but two without getting a hit?
Reach on an error, you know.
Yeah, but
whatever. You can score a run.
Batters.
Right.
But I know
that's
done.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before,
yeah.
But I just don't understand how you could hit. Honestly, after the third batter, well, I don't know. We got to go.
I mean, we
got to go.
But here's the thing. Why are you pitching inside still? You've hit three straight batters.
I'm going to ask Aaron Fitt. I'm going to ask Aaron Fitt when we come back. D1Baseball.com. He's a busy man. I want to get to him when we come back. East Carolina's taking on Coastal Carolina. North Carolina plays tonight. Louisville's going at it right now with Michigan. They've scored 1,000 runs in that. You know, there was a team that trailed by 12 and then won by 14.
How?
In college baseball yesterday. Trailed by 12, won by 14 in the same game. We're going to talk to Aaron Fitt about all of that next. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they aren't familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that will help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. Aaron Fitt is in Greenville, where the Pirates now have a 4-0 lead over Coastal Carolina. It is a game where the winner advances to the Super Regional. And we're all excited for a 4-0 start. But as we bring in Aaron Fitt, I have questions, man. It's gotten contentious, not this game, but yesterday between the Pirates and Coastal Carolina. Can you walk us through what has happened in the games between these two schools?
Well, yesterday, you know, they met in the winner's bracket game at night, and really, I mean, it just seemed like East Carolina, as excited as their crowd was, the team just didn't come out and play great baseball. And I think Cliff Godwin tried a couple of things to try to get him going a little bit. Checked the Coastal pitcher's cap for a foreign substance, and it came back clean. And which, you know, that kind of had the reverse consequence.
Right.
It fired up Coastal a little bit, right? And then, of course, I think Cliff very, very obviously tried to get himself tossed and, you know, very, very quickly made his exit and stomped back to the dugout and, you know, try to ignite the crowd. And they were into it. You know, the crowd wasn't a problem. It was Pirates, you know, they got beat yesterday. Nick Parker was awesome for Coastal. So, but, you know, ETU's come out and looks really good right now and surely they're in control.
Yeah, they lead 4-0, top of the fourth inning. It also got kind of goofy in Chapel Hill. Now, I had not seen the play in question until today. Infield pop-up, sort of. First and second, two outs, early on in the winner's bracket game with VCU on Saturday. And I actually think the umpires got the call right. Like, that was not an easy play. I mean, it wasn't a routine play anyway. Scott Forbes argued that it should have been infield fly, but I didn't like the rest of it. I didn't mind the ejection. He argued a long time. I get that. I didn't like what happened after that. I didn't like the 2-game suspension. Walk me through that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that was unfortunate, and it turned out they ruled that he stayed too long. You know, they gave him 2 games for a prolonged argument. You hate to see that in a postseason game, you know. They gave him a lot of rope. I mean, and at first it was frustrating because we didn't know what the cause of the suspension was. And it looked like if you looked at the video, he was saying, oh, well, like he bumped me. I'm talking about the umpire.
Right.
Forbes was saying he bumped me. But it wasn't a contact-related thing. We found out 12 hours later when the NCAA finally got around to issuing a statement about it, you know, that it was not contact. It was just prolonged arguing. And at the judgment call, I mean, yeah, they probably gave him fair warning, and he stuck around too long. You still hate to see. You'd like to see him get a little bit more rope there.
Yeah, I mean, we're not here to see you guys in blue. And I know you were critical of maybe not these specific umpires, although I guess you were, which is fair because, I mean, they're part of it too, and we should be able to criticize them. I get why we don't want the managers or players to talk directly about the umpiring. I get that. But those of us in the media, we shouldn't be afraid to call umpires out. I mean, they do decide what happens. They do decide how games are played.
And I heard back from some coaches around the country and in different, you know, different conferences after that, saying, hey, this particular umpire crew, you know, they're pretty bad when it comes to this stuff. They're, you know, there's a couple of guys on that crew that are hot-headed and a little bit have that look at me thing. And, you know, and the problem is that there's not a lot of accountability. You know, they basically have absolute power out there. And, hey, that's sports, right? The officials always have the last say. But I wish we had more accountability in the process after the game. I wish there was a better oversight process, a better appeals process. Or, you know, maybe, hey, how about have the umpire who's involved come out and face the media? You know, I mean, everyone else has to answer to what happens on the field. How come those guys don't?
Right. I mean, I'm a fan of a pool reporter, but because in the media, we don't always have just normal media. So I'm a fan of a pool reporter.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com is joining us. All right, so Missouri State had a 12-0 lead over Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma State won that game 29-15. I don't want to just say explain that, but explain that because I have seen multiple 20-run-plus outputs in this play in this tournament so far, and I don't remember seeing – it's been a long time – you know, when they dialed the bats back, it's been a long time since I have seen these kinds of numbers put up. What's going on?
Yeah, it feels like 1998 all over again. You know, the height of the Gorilla Ball era, and you had that 21-14 score in the national championship game in Omaha, which was an embarrassment for the sport, frankly. It just kind of showed everybody that this is way out of control, and they dialed back the bat standards then, and of course they had to do it again 15 years later, but now we're at a spot where things are out of control again. And it's, I'll tell you what, Adam, I'm just going to say it, the balls are juiced. I think we need an investigation here. I mean, the Major League Baseball, you know, they had a similar situation. They investigated and they found out, hey, guess what? Our balls are juiced. I mean, that's why everything's so nuts right now. Clearly, I think at this point it's obvious. And you can talk to people around the country, talk to coaches who cut open the ball and said, hey, this isn't the same. You know, there's something going on here. But you're seeing pop-ups carry out. You're seeing absurd scores. It's kind of cheapened the product, you know. And every time you look up, a ball's flying over the fence. It doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, home run derby is boring. I want to see balls in play on the field. I want to see action. And right now, I'm not pleased with what we're seeing. And there's just been too many of these. I mean, a team scores 20 runs, and it's like the fourth highest scoring, you know, team of the day. It's stupid.
Yeah, there have been many regionals where, you know, somebody scores 18 and it's the second or third highest run output in that regional. I don't know what's going on where Notre Dame advanced, but there were 32 runs combined scored in that regional. Are they using, like, baseballs from the 1940s? What's going on there?
Yeah, I guess they didn't get the shipment. I mean, it's wild. Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about, you know, Texas Tech and Notre Dame are two very offensive clubs down there, you know, that did not score very much. And that's a ballpark where historically, I mean, you see a lot of home runs down Georgia Southern. This year, not so much. That team is more of a pitching defense team. But It was strange to me, you know, just see how well pitched that regional was, and in Coral Gables too, another one that has had some really good low scoring games. But those are such outliers now that it's really refreshing when you see a couple of regionals with scores like that.
By the way, you mentioned Coral Gables. Miami fell apart late and ended up losing, getting bounced from their own regional. How would you assess how the ACC has done? Obviously, North Carolina has a game tonight against VCU at 6 o'clock. How would you say how the ACC has done?
Not great. I mean, obviously, Notre Dame has advanced, but I think right now you got a lot of teams in trouble or already out. You know, Georgia Tech had a shot at Tennessee. They were in it, and they couldn't get it done. You know, Virginia went home yesterday. It seemed a lot of people had some high hopes for. Virginia Tech looks great. I mean, that team right now looks like an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
Scoring a jillion runs, and I think they're the real deal.
46 runs. They've won on aggregate 46-15 in sweeping their regional.
That's nuts. Those are real bats. Those are real hitters there. The pro guys, you know, you got a couple of first round type talents on that team. And they also really defend too. I think they're gonna be a tough out here in the postseason.
Give me what you think about the Tar Heels so far. I mean, they lost that second game to VCU and it put them in the loser's bracket, and it's tough, man. You got to win so many games just to give yourselves a chance on the Monday. But have you seen the Tar Heels so far?
Yeah, they bounced back well, you know, after losing that game Saturday, you know, and their offense has been so hot. It was kind of eyebrow raising to see them get shut down in that game. But you wondered really if there were enough arms in this regional to stop them once you got deeper into the weekend, because it's again, stop me if you heard this before, Adam, it's a real offense. Yeah. You know, they can put up crooked numbers in a hurry, and what Vance Honeycutt is doing is just so special. You know, I'm sure UNC fans are enjoying the ride. You just don't see a talent like that come along very often, and to do what he's doing as a true freshman is remarkable. So, I like their chances tonight. You know, I mean, again, it's a battle of attrition on the mound. You get to this point in the weekend, they'll piece it together. You know, it's not a team that has a whole lot of starting pitching beyond the top two. I assume we'll see Carlson tonight come back after pitching on Friday, their ace, and, you know, and then kind of just piece it together. But I suspect they're going to score a lot of runs. It shouldn't really matter.
All right, give me real quick, assuming hopefully that East Carolina will finish this off tonight, what do you think about Texas, who would be their opponent?
Yeah, that would be fascinating. Tulsa, by the way, just got right back into this game. Looked like a two-run homer here in the fourth inning. Cut that lead in half.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah, and Coastal came back yesterday. They were down against Virginia. They're down 6-0.
They were.
In the middle innings. Yeah, and they came back. So this game not over. But, yeah, I mean, Texas, East Carolina would be electric. I mean, the ultimate, you know, way to exercise the demons for super regionals for East Carolina. I mean, this is the best. You know, I heard Mike Rudy say, hey, it's like in golf, the best player never to win a major. I mean, this is the best program that's never been to Omaha. And, you know, they've been to 32 regionals and, what, four, six supers. I lost track how many supers. I mean, they've had chances. They've had really good teams. And if you got to do it by beating, in my opinion, the greatest program in the history of college baseball with a jillion trips to Omaha and multiple national titles and all that, the history that Texas has, and they come to your place, you know, it's going to be unreal. And so, yeah, that would be a lot of fun if that matchup materializes.
How good were those two catches by Bryson Worrell?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, routine for that dude. He's fun, man. I mean, true five-tool center fielder. If the hip tool, you know, holds up, and he's had a great year. He's hit for power. And he's got a rifle arm. He is really fun to watch.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com. Thank you for letting me bother you while you're working. I appreciate your time. We'll talk again soon, man.
Hey, anything for you, buddy.
Oh, stop. Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com. I apologize to East Carolina fans while we were discussing. It went from 4-0 to 4-0 to 4-2. So hopefully the Pirates will be in good shape. We want them to continue to advance. We want them to advance and take on Texas in the next round.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! Have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.